When it seems like all is lost. When it feels as if you have no hope. When you are outnumbered, overpowered, and they've got you cornered. That's when you realize your last best hope is you. Halo, Combat Evolved, rated M for Mature.
Welcome back to another ONI Nightwire, recording November 10th, 2560. Now at what sounds like a Mizraya Armory warehouse on Mars that I was driven to in what's probably a black Yusiv with tinted windows, and I was blindfolded. I at least got the one, my left eye out from a little shimmy and a shake. But to say any more, I wouldn't be saying any more for a long while, so I'm going to keep my cool here, and we will get the episode rolling. But as to why I'm here, what's better to you, personally? Dying at 300 kilometers an hour engulfed in a ball of Covenant plasma, or being driven insane by the sergeant's flip music as you slowly make your way to the drop zone? For the latter, you can thank the trusty pilots of the UNSC Navy and their ever-reliable transports. And there was no pilot more trusted than the late, great Carol Rowley, better known as Foehammer. And no transport more reliable than the D-77-TC Pelican dropship. So, as always, if you can hear me in your now, then you are receiving transmission from my now via my perfectly tuned somewhere around here. It's the Osmium Cylindrical Forerunner Deep Space Amplification Antenna. So stay on station and be ready to pick up because we're coming in hot. Listen in, fasten in, buckle up, and tune out to the live sound of the Nightwire. What was recorded about Foehammer's life before the Battle of Installation 04 was most likely lost along with all familial members in Vitrum, a polite way of saying lost to orbital glassing rates, truly. But what she helped achieve on Alpha Halo will far outlast anything else she accomplished in life. After the UNSC Pillar of Autumn had made a blind slipspace jump to the Sowell system, Covenant forces were boarding the ship. Rowley and many other members of her squadron, including her co-pilot, Lieutenant Fire, and her crew chief, Colin, escaped during the ensuing battle and descended to the surface of Installation 04, where many UNSC forces had already landed. While the rest of the ship's crew and complement were escaping in lifeboats, Rowley led the pilots in flying their Pelicans off the vessel, feeling that they soon would prove useful. And she couldn't have been more correct. On the surface of Installation 04, she helped Spartan John 117 and Cortana gather scattered Marines and transporting them to Alpha Base, a makeshift UNSC holdup on the ring. Shortly after, Cortana hacked into the Covenant battle net and discovered that Captain Jacob Keyes had been taken prisoner by the Covenant, a rare thing for the Covenant to do at the time. That night, Foehammer was called upon to insert John, Cortana, and a team of ODSTs to rescue Captain Keyes in a raid on the CCS-class battlecruiser above Ring Truth and Reconciliation. The next day, Foehammer deployed the pair and a squad of Marines on a beach to secure the Silent Cartographer, and later ferried John and Cortana to the control room of the ring itself. On the night of September 20th, Foehammer carried John 117 to the installation's flood containment facility. There, Foehammer and her crew survived the flood outbreak by remaining airborne and high above the ground at that. After the chief caused the Pillar of Autumn's engines to destabilize, Foehammer was called by Cortana to evacuate the chief from the pending destruction. When Foehammer reached the designated evac point, however, where the chief and Cortana had been waiting, and for only seconds, she was pursued by twin Banshees and shot down. Although it is possible that Raleigh and or some of her crew managed to survive said crash, which was not actually witnessed, they certainly would have been killed moments later in the destruction of the Halo ring itself. The normally stoic Master Chief was saddened by Foehammer's death, having befriended the pilot during their short time they'd known each other on Alpha Halo. Raleigh was considered one of the best crewmen of the Pillar of Autumn. She never expressed fear in her voice, and she was considered to be a very efficient pilot. Foehammer put soldiers down on landing zones filled with hostile forces without hesitation, taking heavy fire, ignoring the odds and consequences, and never panicked. In addition, she was known to joke around and have a lighthearted sense of humor. In casting, Raleigh was voiced by Tanya Pettiford Waits. The call sign Foehammer is a reference to the 14th level of Marathon Infinity. In turn, the level's name is a reference to Glamdring, Gandalf's sword in the Middle-earth Legendarium, which translated into English means Foehammer. Foehammer is also the name of the dragon-slaying arrow in Stephen King's book, The Eye of the Dragon. Foehammer is addressed by Cortana as a lieutenant in Halo Combat Evolved, though she was actually a captain. Just a canonical error. However, it is possible that Cortana was addressing Lieutenant Fur, though this is unlikely, as Foehammer was the senior officer on board and was thus in charge of Pelican Echo 419. In the original Halo Combat Evolved, Foehammer is an unseen character, as she never leaves the cockpit of Echo 419, which had an opaque windshield. However, the Pelicans in the remake Halo Anniversary have transparent windshields, and Carol Raleigh is depicted using the model of a generic Caucasian dropship pilot, likely taken from the one piloting the Bumblebee escape pod in the cutscene at the end of the Pillar of Autumn. A call to arms, I would love to see a fan-made Foehammer, truer to all of the characterizations in her voice. And probably closer to Tanya Pettiford Waits, if I was to guess. The title, Echo 419, comes from the military phonetic alphabet E, so the craft is actually called E-419, as is evident on the side of the Pelican. In Halo Combat Evolved, the model of Echo 419 with E-14, written clearly on the sides of the ship, is used for nearly all of the Pelicans in the game, with the exception of the crashed Pelican model for Victor 933 with V-933 on the sides of the ship, seen in the level 343 Guilty Spark and the Silent Cartographer. That ship crashed twice? How could this be? It also doubled as the crashed Bravo 022. Echo 419 appears as the Master Chief's primary method of transport from various points on Installation 04 to another during Halo Combat Evolved, to the point that Cortana is always calling for Echo 419 directly, instead of asking for a Pelican to be sent for them. Gotta slow down. I'm so excited by 419. Despite the fact that all Pelicans were supposedly aboard the Truth and Reconciliation when it was destroyed in Halo the Flood, Echo 419 is still around to pick up the Chief with no explanation during the level The Maw. It's possible that as Major Antonio Silva was aware of what the Master Chief was up to, he had sent Echo 419, his most competent Pelican pilot, out ahead of time to wait for the Chief to call for backup, and thus it was not aboard the ship at the time that it went down. Short but sweet, just like our time with Echo 419, Carol Rowley, and the infamous Foehammer. If you want to know more about Foehammer, and you've already played Halo Combat Evolved, then I would highly recommend you read Halo The Flood. And if that still doesn't cite you, then read Last Voyage of the Infinite Succor in the Halo graphic novel. From out of the depths of the Halo War Chest, the incredibly ugly but beautifully sleek, brownish gray but shiny, ever shiny, D-77-TC Pelican appears, ready to swoop you up. The Pelican is crewed by two personnel who occupy the cockpit at the front of the dropship. You're no stranger to this. The pilot sits on the right side, or behind, with the electronics operator or gunner taking up the station on the left. All flight controls are a digital fly-by light with no manual backups. An integral expert system optimizes stability and adjusts the thruster profiles under all regimes and cargo profiles. Unlike on the later D-79-TC Pelican, the cockpit is only accessible from the cargo bay. Motion trackers, radar LiDAR sensors, and a computerized mapping system allow the pilot to plan their way to nearby staging areas as well as to warn of incoming threats. The cargo bay, colloquially dubbed by Marines as the blood tray, usually accommodates up to 10 personnel in jump seats, with a small overhead compartment for their weapons and equipment. Additional infantry can be carried standing up, and increased seating for 10 more people can be installed in the center aisle. Otherwise, this space can be used to carry cargo pallets, casualty litters, or even small utility vehicles such as two M274 Mongoose ULA TVs. The Pelican is also equipped with an onboard weapons locker, which can hold enough weapons and ammunition to arm 30 troopers. At least one Pelican has been modified to act as a boarding craft for Operation Red Flag, which had enough room to ferry 25 Spartan IIs to their target. God, that's like sardines. As well as to carry the cutting gear they required to cut through the hull of their Covenant warship target. Pelicans equipped for soft seal boarding actions have an extendable cover that folds down around the entrance to the troop bay. This configuration was refined during the last days of Operation Trebuchet, and I believe we touched on it in our episode of the same name. The large aft overhang provides a magnetic and physical attachment point for additional cargo and ordnance. Possible payloads include a troop deployment pod, a single large vehicle such as an M808B main battle tank or M12 force application vehicle, or even 8 resupply canisters. It is discouraged for pilots to transport objects in the clamp during orbital insertions, as it can complicate re-entry. The Pelican's primary armament consists of one or more nose-mounted projectile weapons, typically autocannons or machine guns. Commonly known as chin guns due to their placement, these weapons are controlled via an integrated helmet and display sight system, abbreviated to IHADS. IHADS the chin guns, which links to the pilot's or co-pilot's heads-up display and allows them to target the gun by head movements. Fascinating. The Pelican's standard armament is a chin-mounted M370 autocannon, which is sometimes linked with another such weapon. The M370 fires 70mm high-explosive armor-piercing heap rounds as standard ammunition, big bullets, with depleted uranium slugs for the extra kill. This replaced the older 40mm chain gun that was common prior to Operation Trebuchet. Some Marine Corps Pelicans are armed with a single 70mm rotary machine gun instead of a chain gun. In addition to its primary armament, the Pelican has 4 externally mounted missile hardpoints, which typically hold 8 Anvil-2 air-to-surface missiles. Gnarly buggers. However, they can carry a wider variety of weapon systems or specialized equipment pods, usually determined by the mission or by the pilot. A turret can be placed at the back of the cargo bay to provide covering fire for embarking personnel and can range from machine guns to grenade launchers and even a Gauss cannon if the weight is accommodated. While some weapons can be folded against the roof when not in use, others, such as the AIE-486H heavy machine gun, cannot. Pelicans utilize a complicated propulsion system that combines vectored thrust fusion ram rockets with air-breathing hyperfans, divided between 2 primary and 2 secondary articulated engine pods. While ideal for use in an atmospheric environment, they require a hydrogen reaction mass in order to operate. The 2 main engines have 4 nacelles each, 2 on the top and 2 on the bottom. The aft engines being similar but lack a nacelle at the bottom. Because both modules are mounted on rotating blocks, they can redirect themselves from directing the thrust downwards to any direction required. A basic gravitic control system is used in atmosphere to supply further stability and supplementary lift. Although fully capable of orbital transit, the D-77 is too small to be equipped with a full Shaw-Fukujawa Translite engine, and is thus incapable of slipspace travel. The D-77-TC Pelican, like most other UNSC aerospace vehicles, is fitted with a suite of countermeasures to warn the dropship of incoming attacks, break target locks, and mitigate the effects of electronic warfare. These include wide-spectrum flares, micro-drone decoys, rainbow laser blinders, radar LiDAR sensors, directional jammers, and hard-chop guillotines on data processing modules that could be susceptible to cyber intrusion agents. You see why the Pelican has endured so long? To prevent them from being easily taken out by electromagnetic pulses, The Pelican's electronic systems are hardened against such phenomena. As the most ubiquitous Pelican model in service, the Pelican has seen extensive deployment and modification, and is widely marketed to police, security, corporate, and civilian markets. The D-77H-TCI appears nearly identical to the regular and standard D-77-TC, except for a more angular frame of my personal Curry. However, instead of the side-by-side positioning of the pilot and co-pilot, the pilot sits at the fore of the dropship, with the co-pilot behind him or her and at a higher position, in tandem. This D-77H-TCI variant is also capable of sporting missile pods that are integrated directly into the wings rather than the externally mounted pods used by the standard 77. A D-77C variant of the D-77H-TCI that was utilized by the law enforcement agencies of Earth, the D-77C NMPD, employed by the New Mombasa Police Department in Kenya, Africa. It is most regularly differentiated from its military compartment by a black and white color scheme, with the word police replacing the traditional Marines on the external hull and a noted lack of armament, probably for the best. Under the craft's chin, where a machine gun turret or autocannon would normally be installed, are various interchangeable sensors used by police for aerial surveillance and crowd control. An AIE-486H heavy machine gun can be mounted in the personnel bay of a police variant, similar to the 77 and 77H models. However, I don't think I would recommend it. Building upon the versatile foundation of the venerable D-77 airframe, the G-77S Pelican is an impressive gunship design cooked up by Isabel on the UNSC Spirit of Fire's engineers to help turn the tide of battle against banished forces on the Ark to date. The G-77S Pelican gunship boasts a powerful range of armaments, including top-mounted Anvil missile pods, four payload hardpoints, a forward M370 chain gun turret, and multiple 12.7mm Vulcan cannons. The version of the Pelican used by the UNSC Air Force features a few major differences from other variants of the aircraft. First, the cockpit layout resembles that of the newer H-TCI model, with the co-pilot station located behind and above the pilot rather than side-by-side, although the D-79-TC Pelican largely supplanted the 77 in post-war service, surviving hulls would be upgraded with improved avionics and thrusters, redesignating them to D-78-TC and continuing to serve in our great fleet. How about some tactical trivia? A pelican is a seabird. That's it. No, in keeping with the UNSC's tradition of naming atmospheric vehicles after real animals, with the exceptions of the Cyclops and Gremlin, well, you know, real, you know, in my mind, which are named after mythical creatures, and the GA-TL-1 longsword, the B-65 shortsword, the YSS-1000 Sabre, and the F-41 Broadsword. Well, maybe we should just say that the flying atmospheric vehicles, the ones that go in between space and otherwise besides the Pelican, are named after swords. They're named after blades, which makes sense. They cut through the atmosphere of the world. We need to do a Sabre episode. All Pelican dropships in Halo Combat Evolved bear either the numbers 419 or 933. It's done to save resources during development of the game. Remember, the game was made 20 years ago. The Pelican shows clear inspiration from the UD-4L Cayenne dropship from the movie Aliens, which was inspired, or which has inspired, the Halo series in any number of ways. Am I right, Marines? In Halo 2's gameplay, players can see the insides of the Pelican's cockpit, but no pilots are inside. Despite this, they can be heard over comm. There is a glitch in the Halo 2 level Metropolis where the player can ride in a Pelican. It will take the player out of the map, flip, and then eject the player. It's a lot of fun. If the player attempts to ride the flipped Pelican, the script will read, "Hold X to flip Banshee," because Bungie never intended for the Pelican to be operable by the player, and therefore did not make a unique message. Pelican's in-game physics will make it impossible to correctly and permanently flip the Pelican, as it will always reposition itself in an upside-down position. The quirks of game development, I suppose. In Halo Reach, the player can finally pilot the Pelican through an Easter egg on the level New Alexandria. In Halo Reach, the inside screens show information on yours truly's Office of Naval Intelligence's sword base. In Halo Reach, all Pelicans are registered as Noble Team assets, as they are all given the tag Noble 48. Its name is a reference to the number 7, and a reference you will find throughout the series. Short but sweet today, folks. Again, short but sweet. Much like our time with Carol Rowley and Foehammer, but not like our time in spent inside of Pelicans. Really not at all. Truly. Pelican will, it will outlive all of us. My service, for sure. I mean, depending on how the next 24 hours go, maybe it'll outlive me. For sure. For sure. We'll put it that way. I wanted to get this one out and ahead to start, not to in any way diminish the career or what we know of the career of Carol Rowley, but to it knowing that the episode would be a little briefer. This debrief would be briefer in length. So tomorrow we're going to get back into it. We're going to hit hard and heavy with one particular cigar-chomping sergeant, and from there I think we'll continue our jaunt through the characters with a particular captain, maybe even a AI, could be a Spartan 2 super soldier in there somewhere, but you'll just have to wait and see. I can't make any promises. I never make a girl promise that I can't keep. As always, thanks and salute to Super Agent Porpal Montage, developer of the Halopedia database, and once more, congratulations. Enjoy celebrating your 17th anniversary with Halopedia. Agents CIA 391, Sith Venator, and Tacitus for their work on the Board of Bureaucrats. Administrators Bacon Shelf, Dab 1001, Jack Phoenix, and Rusty 112. Patrolling agents Morhek, Shazamakazi, Jack Vibe, Dr. Mutran, and The Arbiter 117. As well as sister site agents Brian H., Commander Riley SV, Halo Prov, Carl-591, Kenny Any Denny, and Ultraforce. Special thanks to contributing agents and their most recent additions to both the Foehammer and the D77 pages. Ethan Gaming 117, D9328, Spartan Leet, Editor Guy, I Love Thompson, Nighthammer, The Eld, Crisper Storm, JZ-623, Captain J, Forerunner, Spartacus, Bradenvoll, Uncle Lenny, the All-Knowing Sithari, Subtank, Halopedia Man, Dragon Claws, and Fatal Snipe 117. Oh, Yanos, Q, Lazien, Karkulujui, Karkulujui. Carcoligi. Sev. C. Boots. 262 Vigilant Guardian. Lego Builder. 3190. And of course, it wouldn't be an episode without Legilis Soup. Appreciation and all credit due to the thousands of Pelican pilots working tirelessly to uphold and keep up to date the Halopedia database. Agents like you, thank you. Additional appreciation to Carlos Carrillo for his efforts in Halo Original Soundtrack Compilation, as well as the remixed tracks heard beneath my voice on this program. Find more of Carlos's work, if you weren't already familiar, under the Classical Extranet site, YouTube, under his handle, K-A-I-D-O-N, Kaidon. I am available all hours of the day, for you that is, thanks to the time dilation this Osmium Time broadcaster functions for, at your classic non-extranet upgraded web portals of Twitter, the Howling Dark, at ONI14122494BB. I'm sticking with it. It's not going anywhere. I got it. I nabbed it. No one was taking it, but I'm holding on to it. Tremendous and very special thanks to the Nightwire donating patrons, Special Agent Cody Ghost, and favorite informant Owen the Lego King. Join Owen and Trevor at patreon.com/ONI Nightwire, where yours truly is creating the ONI Nightwire podcast covering Halo news and lore. Any number of perks, 4 separate tiers, access to the merch shop titled ONI Top Clearance, and truly all price ranges from $2 to $50. $2 is simply a tip, and I appreciate it. But that tip does earn you something, so I guess you're paying for a service. The ad-free RSS feed, meaning ad-free episodes, and the agent shout-out. I mean, don't you want to be shouted out for your service? I mean, I want to shout your name out. $2. That's it. $5 makes you a special agent. $10, a favorite informant. $20, a high-value asset. And $50, a true spook. Lots of benefits, lots of merch benefits. Working on the episode benefits as often as I have time, the biggest one being the Nightwire Nighttime Read-Along, where I'm still currently recording as much as I can of Halo First Strike, my personal favorite of the Halo novels. A classic, truly. Head over to patreon.com/ONINightwire and twitter.com/ONI14122494BB to find your new place amongst the stars alongside fellow agents today. Once again, for all your share, care, and support, I thank you. And that does it for Carol Rowley, a.k.a. Foehammer, the late and great. Rest in peace, truly, my dear. And, of course, we had to touch on the D77.TCI. Pelican dropship. Get swooped. We're like fish. Sardines in a can, if you're Spartan 2s. It really is, I guess. That is the equivalent, right? It's a pelican. Swoops you up. It's just backwards. And everyone inside is the fish. The fish. And your days are numbered if you're sitting in the back of a pelican, am I right? Only the lucky survive. Hoorah. We'll be coming at you tomorrow, as aforementioned, with a particular cigar-chomping sergeant. Very much looking forward to doing that one. It's overdue. You almost might think that I've been keeping it in my back pocket for just such an occasion. And what occasion is that, you might ask? Well, we are here celebrating a 7-part episode series in the ramp up to the 20th anniversary of Halo Combat Evolved, if it wasn't already evident, with the snazzy little intro that I put together. Such nostalgia. I close my eyes and I can see the screen, that big plasma screen, straight out of 2001. We'll hit you again tomorrow. Remember, don't work too hard, don't live too hard, but most of all, we deliver.